You're listening to the Inside Commerce podcast hosted by experienced consultants James Gerd and Paul Rogers. Inside Commerce is your fast track to digital knowledge, featuring interviews with leading e-commerce retailers, industry thought leaders, and the C-suite of key tech companies to explore the latest in digital strategy, customer experience, and tech. Discover what the latest trends really mean and get practical advice based on experience to help fine-tune your e-com strategy and tech stack. Follow us on LinkedIn and reach out to James or Paul if you'd like to discuss an e-commerce project. We hope you enjoy the latest episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Scale Commerce Engine, who have productized the scale and expertise of the fastest growing e-commerce business in Europe, and Swap Commerce, who help you improve every pain point in your ops journey, from shipping, tracking and package protection to inventory and returns. So let's set the scene for today's conversation. It's a talking heads between me and Paul, and we're going to pull apart the pros and cons of like all-in-one platforms versus more composable stacks, with a focus on loyalty, referrals, UGC, and product discovery, because these tend to be two of the big areas within larger tech stack deliberations where people spend a lot of time deciding what the right solution is. And we'll give you some context, and then we'll explore what we see as the pros and cons and like what the decision-making factors. So let's start why we're talking about this. So I think a big reason is there are a lot of deciding factors and influences in what tech you go with. But one of the big ones is strategy, e-commerce strategy, and it varies from business to business in terms of what is the most important thing for a business to execute its e-com plans or to deliver a really good online customer experience. For some people, content is everything. When you're a very content editorial experience-led business, for others, it's not so important as not what customers need, and product discovery and getting really effective search and browse. And especially if you've got a complex product catalog, then search and browse becomes massively important for product discovery. So strategy is a big determinant of what type of tooling you want to look at and what's important to you. But what else, Paul? What other considerations? Why are we talking about this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yeah. So I think it's obviously a big topic at the minute, and there's a lot of replatformings with different drivers behind them. And you know, typically when you replatform other kind of bigger change projects, you're going to review your vendors and either look to reduce cost or go, you know, get better capability or, you know, achieve different goals. But I think the things that I've written down here, I think the main reasons people look at this. So from a kind of administering perspective, lots of people want a single solution where they can benefit from having, you know, data across multiple areas, or you know, can manage multiple areas at global level, stuff like that. So I think that's one driver. Reporting is another one. So kind of getting, so I guess product discovery is a good example where like maybe you could report across all of those areas, or you know, look at trends across all of those areas. Performance is a relatively minor one, but the more, you know, third party JavaScript you're bringing onto the site, definitely a good percentage of opinions that I've been faced with when discussing this stuff, that's been a big one. Just reducing the number of third parties. And then cost is obviously the biggest one, I would say, and maintenance potentially. Cost is definitely a big one. And often these kind of, there's been a huge shift in the market where different vendors have started to kind of come together, and there's a bit of a Venn diagram that can be applied to a lot of different areas. Cost is usually a big part of this, I'd say.
Yeah, and we'll explore those in a bit more detail around the pros and cons. But let's give some examples. For some of you listening will probably think, oh, I get what you mean. I know what you mean in terms of vendors. Others might be thinking, what the hell are you talking about? So let's take example. So loyalty referral UGC. You could, an all-in-one would be something like a Yotpo or a Stamped, where you get a loyalty and referrals, you get reviews, etc., and you get some additional, you know, services, you might stuff around SMS, for example, versus a more specialist review platform like a FIFO, for example, or Power Reviews. You've also got, I guess, one that probably sits in between, like a reviews.io, which is a reviews engine, but actually they acquired influence.io as loyalty. So although influence.io is a separate product, the two are building that integration, so you can have two together, but it's not the same as, I guess, a vendor that started off and has built out all the capabilities without acquiring. And then if we talk about product discovery, you've got all-in-one platforms like Algolia, Klaviyo, Nosto, Attract, well, it's now Crownpeak. There are lots of them out there. versus, you know, you could have a just functional search engine. You either get them native to a platform or third parties where they focus purely on one element of that product discovery suite. So that's what we mean. And now we're going to look at the pros and cons. So let's start with the all-in-one platforms. And typically, a lot of the, most of the businesses I work with, one of the key drivers when they're reviewing tech stacks, and this is not just when they're replatforming, but also when they're trying to look at efficiencies in terms of like licensing and managing multiple vendors, is the talks about tech consolidation is, well, actually, our life is easier if we reduce the number of third parties and we have like a single vendor that we work with. And in principle, that makes sense, but it doesn't always play out. So let's look at those pros and cons. Like, well, for me, the pros of going for an all-in-one is that single partner. So you've got a single point of contact, which from an escalation point, if there are any issues, makes life easier. And they've done more work, hopefully, not in all cases, to make sure those multiple products are integrated so that there's automated data flows between them. So if we take, you know, Yotpo, for example, the fact that reviews could automatically contribute towards like loyalty points, or you could, you can use the automation within there without then having to build another integration from another reviews platform into that loyalty scheme. So that adds a lot of benefit, and that devs tend to like that when there's less effort and integration work where there can be fewer points of failure. And the other one for me is that single interface. And it's not always, but typically in these platforms, you log into a single place and you've got all the tools and capabilities in the back end for you to execute all of your day-to-day configuration work versus having to log into two or three different vendors. So that's, and I guess for people who've moved into like modern SaaS worlds, the likes of Shopify's big commerces, and are used to that kind of like app store setup and access, that can work quite nicely and people are used to that interface. That's my view of kind of the key pros. What do you see, Paul?
Hi, I'm Thomas, Director Growth at Scale. The world's fastest growing e-commerce platform has landed in the UK, with global brands like Manchester United, Deichmann, Snipes and Marco Polo trusting us to scale their commerce businesses. Are you ready for a new e-com experience? Talk to Scale today, because life is just too short for painful commerce.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the pros. I think the only one thing I would say, because we often start like discovery processes and people want one vendor, but I would say in most cases, in all of these areas, I haven't really seen a vendor that's like perfect across all the different areas. And I think you do usually compromise somewhere. So I think then there's middle ground as well. So we would typically, as an example, or the last few projects we've done, separate out search and category merchandising and recommendations as two kind of specialist areas. And a lot of that comes down to like the integration, where I think people maybe that have started around category merchandising would maybe approach things slightly differently to a search vendor that maybe wants to just embed a JavaScript grid as an example, and then kind of retroactively build some of the logic. But I think, I mean, the pros, like you say, I mean, it's cost, it's management. I think it really, you've just got to kind of look at everything fairly granularly alongside that, just to kind of make sure you're not buying something that isn't as strong or doesn't meet the requirements.
Yeah, we'll come back on that later about what influences the decision path, because I think that's a really important one to tease out the different things and what's more important. But I think you touch upon a really good con of this, which is feature compromise for some parts of the platform. And I've had this conversation with a couple of clients recently where this all-in-one appeals, but then it comes down to, and we'll expand on this a bit more, about what's most important. And I think that's critical, because you could, if you don't have a complex site, for example, if you don't have a customer base that's highly demanding in terms of like rapid speed, best on-site digital experience, is not really brand-led, but it's a more functional site with a small product catalog where people just want to find products and buy them. Well, actually, the added bells and whistles and additional features you might get on a market leader around like the reviews, for example, might not be needed. And having a single review engine that doesn't support like syndication, for example, would be fine. Whereas for multi-brand retailers or people who are working with products across multiple domains, like in consumer packaged goods that then have their products across multiple retailers, then that more advanced package with a syndication for the reviews might be really, really important, because that then enables them to execute their strategy more effectively. So I think the pros and cons will vary from business to business as well, which is why it's important. And feature compromise isn't always a bad thing. I had that conversation recently with my client in the US, and I was saying, do you really need this? Are you going to use it? Because if not, it's a vanity play. And it's a really good conversation we're having at the moment to tease out how important each of these additional features is, and whether they believe it's just, it sounds like a great idea, but in practice they'd hardly ever use it, and therefore why would we pay for it? Yeah. The other con I've got,
I was just going to say, the only other consideration here, that I think when it comes down to the detail of selecting a lot of the vendors that we've got here, I think compatibility is the only other one where, like, certain parts of the platform might not be compatible with Shopify Markets or e-commerce's multi-storefront. Or if you got multiple instances, you have to do things 3, 4, 5 times, stuff like that. And I think that's probably also been one of the biggest things that have determined this route as well, where certain ones of these vendors don't support, not necessarily across the whole product, like suite of products, but some products maybe just aren't compatible.
Yeah, it's a good point. Ecosystem compatibility is critical. And I know we talk about this a lot, whether you're on a Shopify or a BigCommerce, Centra, Magento, Salesforce, whatever it is, how well embedded is the vendor platform in that ecosystem? Are there good case studies of people using it properly? And what is the cost and effort to get live? I'm having a conversation at the moment with a Shopify project of a business that's on Zendesk. And Zendesk is a great tool for customer ticketing, customer service and management. But it's not quite as well embedded in the Shopify ecosystem as, say, Gorgeous. So to get to do what you want to do, there are some capabilities you can't enable, but there's a bit more development and configuration work to get it set up. But then if you flip that and go, okay, well, we know that Gorgeous is one of the best embedded for that customer service piece in terms of, you know, tickets having like all the order reference information, and then within the order record within Shopify having the associated tickets, etc., and triggers from Gorgeous in Shopify. Okay, great. But what about the cost and effort of the business retraining on a new toolkit? So I think sometimes when looking in ecosystem and looking at like maybe a tool that gives you more functionality, you've got to think about the impact of change and whether or not that tool, this comes back to our points about the admin interface, the reporting, the capability, is the effort of change justified by the added features you get? And my final point on that, I'm really intrigued to hear your view on this, is if a vendor's got 4, 5, 6 products within their platform, how are they focusing their development resource on those products? How independent are the development pools to drive forward the roadmap for each of the components? Or are certain components falling behind and are actually just becoming more basic over time, and therefore you'll get feature decline versus like best-in-class specialist tools? What's your take on that?
I think the thing with this is one other bit of context that I guess is important. It's like some of the biggest examples are like Yotpo, Akendo, Klaviyo, who have probably been who have maybe done the most to expand their product range. So like via SMS, reviews, subscriptions in Yotpo's case. I think the reason they've done that is for upselling and like increasing, or at least one of the primary objectives, to increase the ticket size per client. And I think in a lot of cases, the reason why people will use them as well is because the vendor will say, he's 6 months free, he's 12 months free, etc. And then they'll gradually increase the kind of value of the customer. But I think, in the majority of cases, and almost all of the vendors written down here, I think their core is usually strongest. And then I do think there's a number of examples where maybe the overall capability is then not kept up with some of the challenges as a result of, broadening the product and entering new or like offering new services, and then they're slower to become compatible with Shopify Markets, or, they're not able to release new features at the same time. And I think, subscriptions is another example of this, like Skio being a really good example where they kind of, came out of nowhere and then just released features at a much faster rate Yeah, and I think, you know, Akendo is another one that we haven't mentioned yet. And they've now entered a load of new areas, including surveys and visual UGC and loyalty, I think, now. And I think Yotpo's subscriptions is a good example of a solution where it obviously looks good on paper, but I don't think you could compare that to some of the other vendors out there. And obviously it does depend, but I don't think there's too many tools out there that have gone from one to four or three different areas and remained best in class. I can't really think of any. I think Yotpo's done really well with loyalty, actually.
They've done well with loyalty referrals, and the SMS add-on is quite useful with reviews. But subscriptions is a hard one, and when I see businesses like them adding it, I think it's a sensible play, because a lot of merchants who just need a basic subscription engine, it kind of ticks a box and it keeps them in like that wheelhouse of their platform and extends revenue. I think when you have more complex business needs, so if you're doing subscriptions where you have different bundles and you have different pricing based on different customer groups, and you have additional functionality where you really want more granular control over scheduling, frequency, and their price breaks, and all of a sudden you start to realize that subscriptions goes from, hey, here's one product and it's 10, if I order it every month, it's 10% off, to, well, actually, this is a bit more complicated. And then when you look at the ability for price, you know, if you go to B2B and then you have different price books, and how can a subscription engine handle price books for different pricing for different, you're like, well, there's very few that can do that. And then you're in specialist territory. So this is why we've got one more discussion point, and then we'll talk about how the decision path gets made, because requirements come into it massively. But you flagged something before we started this, and I've been involved in a few discussions on this, which is, what about building something yourself? If you say, for example, you want personalization, but actually what you really mean is product discovery personalization, where you want customers to see more relevant products, and you want to be able to control the kind of the price point or the brand or the style of product that you're servicing to people, and you want to help with those recommendations and the product category merchandising, the search bit, but actually the content personalization is not as important because you don't do much content. You could build something a bit hacky yourself and save money, and maybe that changes the view of which vendor you go for, but therein lies challenges. So do you want to talk people through about that, when you might want to consider doing one part yourself and then using a third party for a smaller subset?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other one would be native functionality if you were building on top of it. But I think two examples I can think of where sometimes, or three examples where I think some people could use third parties versus might not necessarily needing it. One is content personalization. So I think in a lot of cases, what people want is usually fairly basic on that side, and maybe they just want to like better handle gendering, or, you know, maybe just have better kind of experiences for different levels of customers when they're logged in, stuff like that, which is really easy to build in the theme, and you don't need to then spend loads of money on a third party. And I think the other, in my experience, people that use content pay for content personalization. So of all of our clients that have paid for an expensive third party for this, none of them have got huge value from it, because it takes quite a lot of management and you need a lot of volume of it in the segment to really drive value. So I think that's one. Product Rex is another one. But again, I think we're quite fashion orientated, but I think a lot of people prefer to build their own business logic around Product Rex, and they'll build on top of, you know, a native offering. And the same applies to things like cart upsells and stuff like that. So I think obviously there's huge value for some businesses in product reps, particularly if you're multi-brand or you've got a massive catalog or you've got complexity in that area. But equally, I think that's a good example where you could build something on top of native. And then the other one that's come up a few times recently is bundling. And I think building something yourself, you have more control over, you know, how things are represented in the order, how inventory is handled, like all of that kind of stuff. And then the front end experience. So I personally think that's worth investing in in terms of like building something that's quite unique to your business, rather than just using an off the shelf solution. But again, it depends on, you know, maybe you're very simple, maybe you need to roll it out within 12 hours, stuff like that. So always variables. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of any others. I mean, there's so many different areas now, because obviously we're just talking about these ones that are probably the obvious ones for the suites, but yeah, there's so many other, you know, third party areas, like, you know, notifications or, yeah, anything else. So I think it depends, but yeah, my view is that sometimes you're better investing in like the quality of a feature or building around your business rather than just using a third party in the way that it works. If that makes sense.
Now let's talk about the decision path, because we talked a lot about the differences, the pros and the cons. Now, how can people make better decisions? And let's put a bit of context to this. Is all of us working in the industry, whether it's us consultants running agencies, have a lot of experience with lots of different tech, but we don't know it all. It's impossible. No one person knows every single bit of technology with every single integration point across every single e-commerce platform. It's impossible for one person to. And we are always constantly learning about what works together well and what are the nuances and what are the pros and cons. And one of the key things I think for people to be aware of is, you know, agencies might have consultants might have a specific experience with particular set tools that have shown that those are very good, but it doesn't mean they always are. So you've got to be able to tease that out and make a decision on merit. And a good decisions are made when you get positive conflict. By that I mean challenging each other to go, oh, I'm not convinced about this, or have you thought about X? So it's really good to think about all these decision paths and then have a meaningful discussion to come out with the right decision. So let's start. So number one for me, Paul, is business needs. You've got to, let's say product discovery or product, you know, digital experience, product discovery, I mean, pick your terminology. So we're talking about search, merchandising, recommendations, and the personalization across those journeys. Is it has to start with business needs. The strategy bit is, what is most important? Like, how important is search versus browse? What percentage of sessions hit search? If you've got a really small, and I've seen some clients who've got less than 10% of sessions hitting search. It doesn't mean search isn't important, but it means that relative to the wider browsing journeys for product discovery, it's less important than on like an Amazon, where it's like 80% plus of people go straight into search. So you've got to tease that out, and you've got to understand. Then you've got to look at the personalization element and how critical is personalization across the full journey. What benefit is there based on how broad your product set is, your customer type, how often people come to the site as well. If you've got a site where people only visit once every few months, then it's probably not going to be as much of a benefit than if people are visiting all the time. You've got regular sessions of building up a stronger data profile. It's not to say it isn't important, but maybe not as. So you've got to start with that, because without knowing that, you don't know which part of that product stack is the critical decision point. What else for you, Paul?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's kind of aligned with what you're saying, but I think the compatibility piece is a big one, because I think the world is getting simpler. So I think there's less risk by choosing a vendor than there probably was 2 years ago. But one thing I'd say is I've seen loads of sweeping comments on LinkedIn about, you know, Algolia being the best search solution, and you know, then you've got another one that's slightly cheaper, so that would be the second best. But I do think there's actually, and I don't think people think about the operational side, and particularly, you know, we've got a number of clients that have had a search vendor or search and merchandising vendor where they've had to do everything five times, because there's five independent instances of Shopify mainly, but it's also been the same about the integration with Magento or the integration with e-commerce. And actually that takes five times as long for the team, and they're much better off having something where you can apply global rules, but you can also then go and like apply different logic or different overrides for specific markets. And like, to me, that can be absolutely critical, particularly for category merchandising. So I think that's one. Same applies to like things like Shopify markets. That's definitely important. I'm obviously a big proponent of using like the native template within a Shopify or a BigCommerce. And I think that's another one where I think, you know, if your SEO team don't want a JavaScript grid, or, you know, your developers don't want to work within the templating of, a third party, and then you have to look for a vendor that has like an API connection into the platform, and then you can use the native filtering and grid and everything else. And I think that's another one that's often overlooked. And actually, when you start to add complexity into the grid with like swatches or different types of animation or different types of content, it can get buggy and complex. So yeah, I think that's another one. But yeah, I think it's like, I personally think it's just trying to build a set of requirements. And it's kind of like, you know, obviously you and I, when we're working with brands around the platform valuation, we use, I think you do as well, that the whole kind of Moscow approach. And I personally think just trying to map out like the critical features that you can't live without is really important. And then trying to think about how best to, like, reviews is a good example where a lot of our clients now are way more focused on getting detailed sizing context and surfacing that at different areas of the site than they are about just having a reviews widget. So I think like that, and also things like being able to test different timings of emails or do, you know, do be more advanced with the widget. Yeah, I think some of that stuff, like getting really specific about what you can and can't do, would be my most important one.
Yeah, 100%. No, but it does. It fundamentally starts with what a business is trying to achieve and what does it need to do? What are the use cases that the business team users want to be able to handle on a day-to-day basis? Strategically, the e-com lead and the CXE, what are they trying to improve and change and why? And then that's the functional stuff. And then you're right, the back end bit's so important. So I worked with a client recently to look at the search merch bit. And they have a search provider that's pretty good, functionally wise, it's pretty good, but the back end is so basic and so hard to use. It looks like an old school, developers have built this to be functional, but it's not had any like UX design to align with how a business user, a modern e-commerce user, uses a tool to merchandise a site. So it takes way longer than needed to set things up, and it requires some developer support versus, you know, we mentioned a few times, but Klaviyo, much simpler back end and easier for people to go in and use the tooling. So I think people often underestimate just effective admin tools and intuitive UIs and the benefit that has, because a lot of people end up doing the day to day might be junior mid-level merchandisers or e-com execs. And they don't want something where you need a PhD to figure out which part of the interface to go to and how to do the configuration. But, and the next bit, which is linked to that, is the resource. And anyone listening, your resourcing is critical to this, is who is going to be doing this? What's the level of expertise? How many people do you have the bandwidth to make full use of the feature set? And that's whether you're going for an all-in-one or whether you're going for multiple sub-vendors. Are you going to get usage out of it? Because if you go for like the ultimate specialist, or maybe you, like as you do, search category merch personalization, but you also have a content personalization engine on there on top. Do you have the expertise to make use and the skills and the resources to make use of all of the functionality in all of those three platforms? Because if the answer is no, you've got to question the value of that license fee.
Yeah, I think just going back to your previous point, but it also ties onto this, my favorite example of what you said about like the intuitiveness and the ease of adapting without need for like massive development hours is the CRM side. So pretty much every client I've worked with that has used Klaviyo has been more advanced, which is obviously very simple, very intuitive, has done way more advanced things than the enterprise CRM solutions. And that I've never seen an example where someone bought these solutions for like hundreds of thousands of pounds and actually got any benefit pretty much of using like the feature set. So I completely agree on that point, but that's always my favorite example.
Yeah, exactly. I love it in demos when, because a lot of these vendors are rightfully proud of what the company's built, a lot of time and effort and emotions gone into to creating all these great feature sets and giving people this range of choice. So I'm not denigrating that at all. But salespeople are naturally going to be evangelical about their product and how cool it is, but don't always understand the application of each of those component parts to the specific client they're talking to. So my favorite bit of is, and not in the demos, but afterwards, is getting people to go, right, how would you use that? Not, do you like the idea? Everyone likes that. Do you like the idea of personalization? Yeah, I love personalization. How are you going to use it? So this specific bit, I'll give you an example of AI-generated segments. So a tool that, I call it DXB, a tool that automatically generates segments on the fly based on all the behavioral and transactional data it's getting to create subsets of people that you can then tailor the experience to or tailor your product recs to. The question then becomes is, okay, how is that going to benefit your customers? If you can find a tangible use case, go, well, that, we think it's going to deliver value in X, Y, and Z, and then you can measure it, great. But if it's, well, we haven't got a clue, then it's not a valuable feature for you. Personally, that's my way of doing it. And I think it's a really good scrutiny to add after demos.
That makes sense. I think the other one that you've written down here that I think is really key is roadmap and rate of innovation. And I guess, again, bringing it back to like Shopify world, but there's obviously lots of change around Shopify with markets, the new checkout, you know, POS extensions, like, yeah, functions, whatever else. And I think having a partner that is immediately focused on staying on top of those things and supporting things, like there's plenty of examples without calling them out too much. Like MentionMe is a good example of someone that isn't compatible with the new checkout in Shopify. And that stuff's critical as well, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, and I've had a number of clients that have had to wait to do the new checkout because of different third parties. And I think, yeah, like making sure that they've got actual development resource focused on improving the product, improving compatibility, introducing new features, introducing new integrations with like the challenges in the ecosystem. Yeah, I think that's pretty critical as well.
Yeah, it is. And then we talked about a lot, but cost is obviously fundamental to this. But there, I think sometimes people underestimate costs, and you've touched on it a few times because you've license fee is one. Some vendors will negotiate, others won't. So you've got to factor that in. How much can you push people? And negotiation can vary across e-com stacks as well. So sometimes you find variation in how much you can negotiate on like a Magento versus a BigCommerce versus a Shopify for a third party. You've got the integration upfront fee and then the maintenance complexity that adds to your ongoing support maintenance. That's great. Those are the obvious costs. I think everyone who's in an e-com team who's gone through vendor selections will understand that and will discuss that commercially. The one that gets missed is, and it comes back to resourcing, is time and effort to use the tool. If one tool has a perceived benefit in the fact that it's quicker for you to get to market with setting up campaigns, so take a product discovery engine, if it's quicker for you to go and set up like a search campaign, set up a redirect, or to create a promotion, or to set up category merchandising rules and visually change the grid and sort orders and work, you know, merge algorithms with curated manual merchandising, whatever you might do, or insert hero content into a grid. If one tool enables you to do that far quicker, and you can timestamp that and go, right, it's going to cost, our standard campaign's like an hour's work on this tool and it's 45 minutes on another one. If you calculate that across a year, how much is that saving you in time that's used for other value add tasks? And that's a bit I'd encourage people to think about as well. The bigger the team, the more impact that has in your cost analysis.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. One thing we haven't talked about on this list that I think can be important, or at least dependent on your team, can be very beneficial, is service. So, you know, having good account managers, solution architects, like just having good support when things go wrong. But yeah, I think that can make a big difference. And actually, a few of the vendors that we've talked about today have had periods where they've maybe not resourced that as well. And I think that has, yeah, had a big impact. And equally, there's some people in the industry that do that really well. Klaviyo do support really well. So did Taglease and a few others. And I think that does make a difference and allows you to get more out of it.
Yeah, 100%. It's a really good point, and it's a great one for us to end on. And service goes from initial engagement. And my personal take on this is if a technology company only puts salespeople into the pre-sales process and don't give you any technical person who can help you understand and articulate proper like integration challenges, then it always concerns me, because you should have a pre-sales technical specialist who is able to like interface with like your development counterparts or more technically led e-com leads, because there are some e-com businesses work with where the e-com lead is a very technical focused person. You've got to have somebody who can't just go, yes, we can do that, but actually talk about that integration part, talk about how the API works, talk about how they ensure the API performance, give you some metrics on like response times, etc. And then the support from a customer success point of view, plus the ongoing technical access. So if there is an issue, or if there is a future integration problem, that there is a technical person on hand to work with your devs. So yeah, really important point. Anything else we need to mention before we close this off? Because I feel like we've probably covered quite a lot of useful ground for people, but then I'm biased.
The only other one thing I'd say that I think, so obviously the last episode we did was with Hannah Spicer, and I've used her as an example with some other people. So obviously the big part of Klaviyo's growth was them building out the ecosystem and like the service industry around it. And I think I always say with Klaviyo, one of the reasons why I love it so much is you can migrate over to Klaviyo and you can bring someone like Hannah Spicer in and pay 10, 15 grand. And then she will do all of the work that would probably take a year in another, working with another vendor. So I think I really like that as well, like having an ecosystem of specialists around the product and being able to outsource if you want to, or having really solid documentation to do stuff if you want to bring another team in, stuff like that. So I think that goes a long way as well.
Yes. Yeah, really nice point. That was a great episode. And for anyone listening who didn't catch the episode, it's about what's hot and trending in email marketing and like using tools like Klaviyo to improve your email strategy. So well worth listening to. Look, thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you found that useful. Give us a shout. Hit us up with comments on LinkedIn or DM me and Paul directly. Anything we've said that you don't agree with, anything you want to build on, or what's your tips and advice for whether you go for all-in-one or whether you pick best in breed or specific capabilities. And make sure you're following Inside Commerce on LinkedIn as well. And we've got the Inside Commerce newsletter on LinkedIn that goes out every 2 weeks, so you can subscribe to. Thanks for listening. Take care, everyone.
You're listening to the Inside Commerce podcast hosted by experienced consultants James Gerd and Paul Rogers. Inside Commerce is your fast track to digital knowledge, featuring interviews with leading e-commerce retailers, industry thought leaders, and the C-suite of key tech companies to explore the latest in digital strategy, customer experience, and tech. Discover what the latest trends really mean and get practical advice based on experience to help fine-tune your e-com strategy and tech stack. Follow us on LinkedIn and reach out to James or Paul if you'd like to discuss an e-commerce project. We hope you enjoy the latest episode.